Right, quick question. What was the holiest place that you've ever been to? Strange question, isn't it? The holiest place. I mean, what makes something holy? What makes something feel that extra bit special? All the things that you've mentioned, I haven't been up the top of, that I haven't been to York Minster, but I think we can all relate to something like that. I mean, like, been to Durham Cathedral, and you just kind of see the building. Yeah? There's something about that that feels, climb to the top of a mountain, you think, oh, that's, I don't know, like, the hospital room where Boaz was born, that felt, it was messy, but it was, but there was something about that space that felt, is holy the right, I think it is holy. There was something that, it wasn't just the sum of its parts, do you know what I mean? That it's not just some bricks and some stained glass windows, is it, York Minster? It's something about it that's holy. There are times where you get to the top of a mountain and it's not just a big pile of rocks, there's a bit of a bigger pile of rocks than all the other piles of rocks. There's something about it that feels holy, feels special. I've been thinking a bit about this concept this week, because there are some places that seem to be holy some of the time and then don't seem to be holy some of the rest of the time. So that kind of makes sense. It's almost like you go somewhere. So I'll give you a good example. The place that we got married, the day before it didn't seem very special. That's because there was a lot of stress. There was a lot to be done. I remember we were throwing hay bales around everywhere, which made my mum very happy because she was brought up on a farm. And there were a lot of jobs we were trying to put up bunting, and I was getting very stressed because bunting is not something that I get on very well with. We're trying to put up these things on some arranges, it's all got to look good, we got the flowers out, and you know what? And I remember that Friday, it did not feel particularly holy. But when Charity walked down the aisle, then suddenly, that same space. There was something about it at that moment, and everyone's silent, and then she sung Amazing Grace as she walked down the aisle. And there was something about that. They would tell you that was holy. There was something about that. It wasn't just the sum of its parts. It was God was there in a meaningful way, in a way that hadn't felt so tangible the day before when we were trying to get blankets and hay bags. I mean, think, so what is this concept? What is this idea that we can have a holy place? I remember being a kid, and we were doing some event at some church. I can't really remember why I was there, but I was getting bored, and so I did what I would normally do, which was organise a game of hide and seek, which was a lot of fun. But I remember the look on the fella's face when I hid behind the altar. He was not happy. Now, you've got to bear in mind, I'd grown up in a church that did not have an altar. I didn't really know what this fancy table at the front of the church was. And so for me, it was alright for me to hide behind. He was not happy. Just a holy place. Not allowed to hide behind the altar. I was thinking, why not? It's a really good hiding place, to be honest, right? Because a good height, and then I was quite little. So. And there's that attitude, isn't there, that some people call things holy, and what they mean by that is only some people are allowed here. Some people try and make stuff holy by pushing people away, don't they? They try and make it holy by limiting the access. So I keep thinking about this question. What is it that makes something holy? Then we read this story. So Jacob, just to give you a bit of backstory, Jacob's had a falling out with his brother that was quite significant because his brother now wants to kill him. So Jacob runs away, and we assume he runs away at quite a stark pace because it comes to night time and Jacob uses a rock as a pillow. So I think we can probably deduce from this story that Jacob didn't have a bag with him. Because come on, Jacob, like literally anything is more comfortable than a rock to use as a pillow. So you would have thought if he had like a bag with at least some extra clothes, you would have used that as a pillow. But clearly he can't, because he had to run away so quickly from his brother who wants to go anyway. So Jacob gets to this place. And he's in the middle of nowhere that obviously didn't have Airbnb, because else he would have stayed there. So he has to use a rock for a pillow, and he's sleeping there. And he has a bad night's sleep because he's got a rock for a pillow, and he starts having these dreams. And he has this incredible dream of angels going up and down into heaven. And then he wakes up, and my favourite line of the whole story, and I'm sure you may have picked up as Joan read it, as Jacob wakes up, he says, "Surely God was in this place, and I did not know." Surely God was in this place, and I did not know. Because you do not need to go to York Minster to experience God. You don't have to go to the top of Ben Nevis. God seems to make it a habit of making ordinary places holy. Ordinary places holy. There was something about that place where we got married that it felt like God was there in a very powerful way. As Charity was singing Amazing Grace and everyone went silent, apart from people crying, obviously. Not because it was bad, like, from the emotion. There was something about that that it felt like God had entered into that space and made it holy. I don't know if you've ever had that experience where you're in a conversation with someone, maybe it's the sun starts setting, and you become aware of the fact this place is holy. There's something special about this. Something about God's presence that has taken this, what would normally be an ordinary situation, to something special. And you catch yourself and you're like, wow, surely God was in this place. And I did not know. The Bible's full of it. God meets Moses at a burning bush. Elijah, not in a whirlwind, but in a whisper, at the doorway to a cave. Jesus meets Zacharias up a tree. The woman at the well, who's just getting water, doing her day-to-day stuff. Peter at his workplace, which was a beach. Not a bad place to have a workplace, actually, but that's because Peter was a fisherman. A rubbish one, actually, if you've ever read the Gospels. But anyway, that's another point. Peter's at the beach, Mary Magdalene's at the tomb and finds Jesus standing behind her in the garden. And all of these encounters, we see God meeting us at a place that seems ordinary and by God's presence is transformed into something extraordinary. So my question to you is this week, will you be aware of when God is making your ordinary space holy? Will you be aware of the times that it seems like an ordinary time and you're washing the dishes or you're walking up the high street, but will you be aware when God is trying to make that space holy? Because God transforms the ordinary into the extraordinary. Surely God was in this place and I was not aware of it. Tell you what, I find that very hard to do. I don't know about you, but most days I don't really stop to think. Like, let alone try and make myself aware of God's presence. You kind of get up and there's emails to be sent and there's texts to be replied to and there's family members that you need to reconnect with and there's jobs to be done and there's marking to be done and there's lessons to be planned and there's sermons to be written. There's phone calls to be returned and there's people to meet up with and there's meetings to be had and there's nappies to be changed. And there's walks you've got to go on in order to get by us to sleep. And you've got to make dinner, and then you've got to wash up dinner, and then you've got to do the housework, and then you've got to do this, and then you've got to do that, and then you go to bed. And it's very easy to go to bed and think, oh my word, where did that day just go? Maybe it's just me who finds this. You look up and you're like, I remember having a meeting with someone, and I said, oh, that's a really good idea. We'll do that in the new year. It's September. Honestly, where's it gone? I was meant to have sorted that out in January. There's something that I need to do in my life, and maybe you do too. I need to find times in my day where I need to become aware of the fact that maybe God is in this place and I have not been aware of it. I need to do something that just reminds me that God might be in this place and I need to be. Some people wear crosses around their necks, don't they? Because every time they see it, they think, oh, God is in this place. Sometimes I know people who every time the phone rings, it reminds them that they're like, I need to be aware of the fact God is in this place. Some of you, I don't know what it is for you. Maybe every time you walk through a doorway, you might stop and think, I need to be aware that God is in this place. St. Francis de Sales, who I assume is the patron saint of retail therapy, said this several times during the day, but especially in the morning and evening. Ask yourself for a moment if you have your soul in your hands, or if some passion or fit of anxiety has robbed you of it. If you have gone astray, quietly bring your soul back to the presence of God, subjecting all your affections and desires to the obedience and direction of His divine will. St. Francis de Sales. We hold our soul in our hand. And if we feel like we have gone astray, we need to bring it back to God. Because God might be in that place. You just might not be aware of it. God might be in that conversation, you just might not be aware of it. God might be in your living room. He is. We can make ourselves aware of it. Part of the challenge for us to live in a space that's holy is to be aware of the God who's already there, who wants to make the ordinary places holy. But I think there's another way that we make spaces holy. I'm going to read to you a little passage that many of you will have heard before, and this is from Matthew 5, Jesus' famous Sermon on the Mount, which is brilliant. And this is Matthew 5, 38. Jesus said, "You heard it was said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. And as Gandhi pointed out, that leaves the world blind. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well." I think that should be hand over your undergarments as well. "If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow you." Sure, you're thinking, why on earth are we talking about this when we're talking about trying to make places holy and wherever we are trying to be aware of God's presence? And I'm going to tell you. Because I want you to picture the scene. I want you to imagine the type of people that Jesus is talking to when he's telling this sermon. So a bit of a brief history lesson, and I promise it will be brief. At this time, the Israelites were living in Israel and were under the cosh of the Roman Empire. So they are living as second-class citizens. It's not a very nice place to live, because the Romans get to do what they want, and the Jews are treated pretty terribly. Now, I just want you to imagine that you are one of those Jewish people. Now, it's important to know that these Jewish people would have seen the Romans as disgusting humans. They would have seen their oppressors as sinners, as Gentiles, as unclean. And you can kind of imagine why, can't you? Because if you spend your whole life acting as basically a slave to this other class of people who have come in and invaded and like killed half your family and all the rest of it. Anyway, you're not going to hold them in very high esteem. So whatever. The Jewish people do not like the Romans. And so they do not want to hang around with Roman people. Because if you hang around with people who are sinners, they thought, it makes you unclean. We don't want to hang around with the Romans because that's going to make us unclean, because the Romans are unclean, they're sinners. So we need to stay away from the Romans. So they would spend their life trying to avoid the Roman soldiers who used to patrol down the streets. Now, there was a problem with this plan of trying to avoid the unclean Romans. And that was the fact that the Roman soldiers had to carry a lot of stuff. And if you are a Roman soldier who has to carry a lot of stuff, what do you do? Get one of those Jewish people to do it, don't you? One of those Israelites. And since you've got a sword, they're probably not going to argue with you. If you would like to hear an excellent story about how Alan delegated the task of carrying his very heavy pack on a trek in Nepal to a small Nepalese pensioner in flip-flops, I can highly recommend hearing it. Because Alan, like the Roman soldiers, didn't fancy carrying his pack very far, so he found the nearest poor person who he could delegate that task to. There's no right of reply, is there, when I've got the microphone? You'll have to ask Alan at the end. Anyway, and so the Roman soldiers had a rule that they would be allowed to find any passing person who was not a Roman and make them carry their pack. But they were only allowed to make them carry it 1 mile. So, you can imagine the scene. If you are one of the Israelites who does not want to spend time with the ungodly, unclean, dirty Roman soldiers because you don't want to be made unclean by their presence, you are forced to carry the pack 1 mile. Can you imagine what the soldier's face would look like if at the end of 1 mile you turned around and were like, "To be honest, mate, I could do another one if you want." Can you imagine? This Roman soldier who has treated you like a second-class citizen, who's treated you like a pack animal, who's forced you to carry his pack, and you turn around and say, "Oh, to be honest, I can go a bit further." Can you imagine how that situation would change? Can you imagine the different way the Roman soldier was going to treat you? Oh, suddenly you're not an animal, you're actually a person with a choice, who's actually decided to help me out. Because we do not make ourselves holy by avoiding spending time with those we consider sinners. We do not make ourselves holy by avoiding people who we think are worse than us. We do not make ourselves holy by avoiding people who are different from us or who have maybe treated us poorly in the past. No. We make a situation holy by the love of Jesus and its transformation power in that time. We make a situation holy by the way we treat others. We make a situation holy by the way we forgive. We make a situation holy by the way that we go the extra mile, literally as well as metaphorically. We make a situation holy by the way that we treat people like they're humans and not some evil outsider who we need to avoid spending time with. It is in that moment, let me tell you, that second mile will feel much holier than the first. As they carried that pack, that extra mile, imagine the conversations they had. Imagine the love that would have been shared. Imagine the fact that you now have two people treating each other like humans rather than one treating one like an animal and the other one treating the other like an ungodly sinner who needs to be avoided. Because we make situations holy by demonstrating Jesus' love to the people around us. That's how Jesus asks us to treat each other. Wherever we are. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to watch a short video, and then we're going to finish with a song this morning. God, I ask that this week we would be aware of your presence with us. We thank you that you're a God who takes our ordinary, mundane, day-to-day life and you invade it with your love and your energy and your creativity and your power and your Holy Spirit. We thank you that you are with us. When we're going through really tough times, when we're going through great times, when we're just trying to keep our head above water, your Spirit guides us. We thank you that you're with us, and I pray that this week we'll be aware of that. And I also thank you, God, that the way we treat others can make situations and relationships and times home. That the way we treat people who have wronged us, the way we treat people who are different than us, the way we treat people who we do not like, that is how we demonstrate your love, and that is how we make situations holy. May we do that this week. In Jesus' name.